All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to In Liberty and Health. This is going to be a very, very fun show. I just know it. Not too much Libertarian Party drama. That'll be for another stream. We may kind of laugh at some people because I think there's some worthwhile LawCal content out there. But anyways, I won't keep you guys too long in this portion of the show. I'm a little bit burnt because of the kayaks. I was doing the most Kyle thing you could possibly do, and that's drinking monsters, alcoholic monsters on the river while kayaking. So Tiger Fitness for all your supplement needs below. Hit the link below, and I think they still got the Memorial Day sale going on. I spent like $350 on supplements, protein bars, and all that good stuff. And Fox & Sons Coffee for the coffee that I drink relentlessly. I think I'm still drinking the Honey Prep or the Electric Boo-Boo. I can't remember. But anyways, all that good stuff. And the links below for my guest today and his books and everything he's got going on. So yeah, let's get into it.
And Reagan used to do this with the communists. I remember this when he was negotiating. He made himself look like a deranged lunatic with his finger on the button, on the nuclear button, so that Russia had to believe that he wasn't bluffing.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of, as a guy, what you have to do. You have to treat your woman like a communist.
Yeah. Or like I try like a communist.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sitting there going, oh, you know, my wife's a three. I play Tekken on Twitch for pennies. My name's Ryan Stone. Your life sucks.
Steven Crowder caught on 4K yelling at his wife about pick up the dog shit, and she divorced him. My girl last night, one of the dogs had an accident, didn't even tell me, just cleaned up the dog shit, came in, got mad at the dog for shitting on the floor. And I'm like, you know, Steven Crowder married his high school sweetheart, they were virgins when they met, divorced over dog shit. Meanwhile, me, total fucking mid-cad, dated a girl, fucked around for a couple years, then settled down, whatever. One of us has dog shit on the floor, and the other one's still in a relationship. I'm just saying. Just saying.
The funny part is where I know everybody keeps talking about themselves red pill, but they're still talking about holding bitches accountable. It's like, I don't know what to tell you other than, like, you really aren't red pill at all. You don't know shit, because you still haven't accepted the nature of women. Yes, their reputation to them is just as important as your balls are to you. Don't kick it. Don't stomp on it. Don't flick it. Put your mouth on it, but be subtle, but be soft, but that's it. Don't fuck with them. Actually, that's a pretty good way of thinking about it. Women think of their reputation like guys think of their balls. And even the littlest bit of damage, and you're going to throw up.
But a YouTuber from the Manosphere named Ryan Stone tweeted, showing off the F trophies for clout.
It feels like I died, and then you're like, here's the best of what he had. So quiet. Yep. I was expecting the end, that photo of me looking goofy with like an in memorandum. Son of a bitch. Delete all that. Delete all that.
I had a few of those clips on my phone, and then I was listening to your show this morning. I was listening to it a little bit live, and then just didn't get around to finishing it because I didn't have good reception up when we were at a camp. And then when I heard that whole line, I'm like, okay, I know what I have to do now. Oh, montage.
Son of a bitch. You know, so like at Fleet School, when I was down there, my first course party, my students had given me a document. Mm-hmm. I guess during the year when I teach, I do kind of the same thing where I have like these goofy non sequiturs and make very weird comparisons between things that make sense, but are really stupid.
Yeah.
And they made a list of all the ones I had used for the course. I still have it in my file, wherever that is, all my military stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, here's everything weird that you said that we thought was hilarious during the course. I was like, dude, this is like 5 pages long. What the hell? I'm like, yeah, you're pretty funny. Like, thanks, man.
Yeah, it's, I guess it's kind of weird to have people like watching your tics. I had an instructor when I was in college, and I remember he always used to say, oh, what the fuck was it? Naturally. And like, we had a whole book where every time he'd say something, as soon as you say it, like, naturally, we'd be like, all right, there's one.
Oh yeah, the tics, dude. The military, we had that. So when we're learning in PLQ, they have that where it's, mm-hmm. you sit there, you give your lectures, and then the audience, their goal is to make you cry by pointing out every one of your tics. So I'm like, I'm exceptionally aware of my tics. The word so, mm-hmm. starting a sentence with so, that's mm-hmm. the only one I still have that I need to kill.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, ums, ahs, you just learn to crush all that stuff. It's really a skill, and I got to pay attention to my last stream to make sure I didn't do any of it.
Oh,
yeah,
my God.
I'm assuming I didn't do any of it. We'll find out. But yeah, so far my verbal tick is to represent is to talk about communism like I give a fuck.
Well, I like the first clip that I'd lined up there was you basically have to treat your girl like a communist.
Oh, yeah. There was probably a better word for that, too. I don't know. What was I talking about in that one? Oh, yeah, yeah. Where you have to act crazy so they know you're not bluffing. Yeah, that was I took that from Noam Chomsky, of all people. Mm-hmm. He brought that up. That was that point about Reagan. Yeah. Acted crazy so the Russians assume he was going to launch a nuke, so they better treat him with kid gloves. It's like mm-hmm. a really well thought out real politic policy. But yeah.
Yeah, the big political thing always is, especially Donald Trump, because he always talks about this, is peace through strength. We had peace through strength. And basically, I think it kind of goes back to that principle of like, you have to act like a fucking crazy person. So that way people think, you know, you don't know what the fuck they'll do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you even see it now when you go to a CVS and you see a large urban individual and he's yelling at you, like, you know who the fuck I am? Don't fuck with me. And you're like, oh, okay. You notice how nobody like world stars him in the face. Nobody hands out a nap. Everybody leaves him alone.
Yeah.
Just saying, you just take the urban attitude towards running a CVS and just apply it to your political international policies. I think it's deceptively smart as a strategy. And there, you give that to your libertarians during their little LibCon. Mm-hmm. What do they call it? I guess you call it LibCon. It sounds like liberal.
Yeah. Tarion. It was the Libertarian Convention that just happened this weekend, and I wanted to play a clip and get your reaction. So right now, in the States here, we have RFK, he talks like this. He has some kind of like voice issue. And then Donald Trump, who's Donald Trump, and then a senile man, and then now the Libertarian Party's presidential nominee is a gay dude who wants to... You know, who's okay with the kids stuff. You know what I mean?
An armed gay weed smoker, so the meme has become a candidate now?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, this was the guy that was kind of like representative of, I guess you could say, my faction of the party. And he had a... I said
libertarian factions?
Yeah. Oh, dude, it gets more niche. So
this sounds worse than like when we're like, well, that's an MRA. We're MGTOW. Like,
yeah. Honestly, it's probably worse. So I said our friend here, Michael Rechtenwald, who actually is pretty good on the issues, but he's boring as could be. There was a moment this weekend that I would like your perspective on.
That's popular.
I mean, Donald is on. Is it? Never mind. But listen.
So that was the moment. I said that was like a Joe Biden moment where he just
is that a stutter or was that making fun of Trump or what was the point of that? Or does he have like Tourette's?
I allegedly the dude took a gummy beforehand and smoked a shitload of weed.
You know what's funny? I'm going to be president of the United States. Here's your chance to make the appeal to the people most likely to get you there. And like to take it so unseriously, like just one sec, let me eat 5 pounds of weed before I get up there.
Yeah, that's pretty much what he did. And
yeah, am I like the last generation of people who's like, I got a busy day early tomorrow, I better go to bed early? Like, does that not happen anymore?
That happens for me, but like I see other people that are like, yeah, dude, I just like showed up to work drunk off my ass, or you know, I smoked a whole shitload of weed.
Even that stuff, I can even get past that. It's kind of like, hey, my wedding's at 4 a.m. tomorrow. I'll stay up till like there, be early for that. Hey, my mom's surgery. I have to drive her to the hospital 3 states over and we have one spot available. It's like, go to bed early. Lay off the weed for like 6 hours. I don't know, whatever. You want my take on it? That was my take. He does. I guess it's something I learned with the red pill thing that you guys are probably learning the libertarian thing is that you get the kind of, you get what you deserve. I get to have a bunch of like sexless, God-fearing, zealotous incels yelling at me about putting me in a wood chipper, and you get drunken, high, gay libertarians forgetting their speech. We got this, babe. Oh, you have that one clip that Trump gave during his speech for that?
Oh, I could find it. So basically,
all I know is the one part of it's so funny where he's sitting there, it's like, hey, vote. And somebody was saying something like, why would we vote for you? You're not libertarian. Like, hey, vote for me only if you want to win.
Otherwise, sit here with your 3%, laughing it up, having your little jokey times, drink, smoking your weed. But if you want to win, vote for me. And I just, the way he put it out, it's like, do you want to be a loser or not? And I was like, dude, Andrew Tate could have said that to some 13-year-old kid to get some.
It was major. What color is your Bugatti vibe?
Yeah.
Okay, actually, here we go. Let's see.
I wouldn't vote for me. It's way easier to sit here in obscurity. That doesn't matter. I don't know. American politics. I like your politics because even when they're stupid, they're not. Yeah, there it is. Of course, it's okay. That had it.
Yeah, okay.
The Libertarian Party should nominate Trump for president of the United States. Whoa. That's nice.
I love his mannerisms.
That's nice. Yeah. Only if you want to win. Only if you want to win. Maybe you don't want to win. Maybe you don't want to win. Thank you, D-Roy. Thank you. No, only do that if you want to win. If you want to lose, don't do that. Keep getting your 3% every 4 years. The reasons for doing so, policy and politics.
Just the balls to go to oppositional political party and just say, nominate me. Yeah. I'm the greatest.
Hey, if you want to stick here, this that 4% line. It's like he knew he could actually narrow down, no offense to the libertarians and the thing, how much of a loser they were to the percentage point. Enjoy your 4%, 48%. There's some nobility in that. 49%. Right. Oh, that was close, but 4%, where it's kind of our party in Canada is called the People's Party of Canada, which for a libertarian-esque party is a very strange North Korean name for it, but whatever.
Sure.
It's run by a Quebec guy, so whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they get 4% of the vote, but it's consistent across the country, so they get no seats. And that's always their thing. And they always put the stupidest people in there. Here's a good example. And this is where I bet you anything you got a libertarian example of this from you.
Oh, I can't wait.
So there was a bunch of people they had running in parties, mostly in small backwater places in the prairies. Yeah. The one guy that was there that was cheerleading most of this, Trudeau is wasting all of our government money, blah, 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 grift this, grift that. Turns out he was a federal employee that actually was part of what's called a RiveCan, the most tyrannical cell phone app in the history of the world, apparently. Mm-hmm. It was essentially you put all your personal information on there and they can use it to track your movements. And they said because of COVID and getting off the planes. But then they're like, yeah, where does our data go? And it's turns out China was getting it. They're selling it off to people. And the guys who made the app didn't even make the app. It was just a bunch of middlemen. They paid Fiverr, a bunch of East Indian dudes, to do the app for them. So there was no security for it. And they were pocketing $50 million, something like that. And so whenever you hear Canadian grifts, just add a zero to it. And that would be the American equivalent. So a $500 million app that didn't work. And it was the guy was running it out of his parents' basement, literally. And it turns out he was already working for the government, the federal government as well. And he was running as the libertarian, no more government grift party, candidate. It's the funniest thing ever.
I'm going to make myself unemployed. I'm running on making myself unemployed.
Yeah, it's like Jack Murphy for politics. Traditional conservatism. Bang my wife, please. But I'm bumped.
You know, I was thinking about adding a Jack Murphy joke in that little beginning montage, but I'm like, I don't want to have this be too long. It needs to be just long enough that you get some good bangers in there. And yeah, I think I had a video.
Oh, that's why you brought me here, for humor. You're like, dude, I'm as interesting as burnt toast. I better bring this guy on, have him just run his mouth. I'll point politics stuff at him. He'll just make fun of that.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so I guess I should ask, how is viewing American politics from the Canadian perspective? Because you were the one who kind of woke me up to the whole Canadians invading America on political commentators. So
all right,
it's got to be such a clown show for you.
So a serious answer, though, Canada has this weird non-obsession with America. Because obviously you guys are close. You have all the media stuff there. We have, and there's a couple things that are very different with Canada and America. You know how it's mostly the Republicans over there that are nationalist, American, yeah, yeah, yeah. For here, it's our liberals. They have that nationalist Canadian thing, which kind of has the after effect of the Canadian identity is based on not American.
So when we brag, most Canadians will brag about healthcare, which was developed in the, I think it was the program started in the 60s. I don't know why. I can't remember the guy's name. He's like the third most famous Canadian on earth next to like Terry Fox and Wayne Gretzky, mm-hmm. but Tommy Douglas, I think it was, maybe Tommy Douglas. Anyway, so the whole point of that is Americans have to pay out of pocket. Ours are from taxes. That makes us better. And so mm-hmm. we kind of just gotten the idea that everything we do is because America's don't. You get a whole bunch of problems with that. That's why we kind of, our government picks economic winners. That's why we have four or five monopolies of like cell phone monopoly, internet monopolies, grocery stores monopolies.
Yeah.
I could think of like a bunch of other ones, but the point is now, and that's shitty because all of our stuff costs too much. So the reason this comes up is because you get two byproducts that end up with this Steven Crowder shit. The first one is what I call 51st state Canadians, and you'll recognize them because they keep reminding you, just so you know, you're not American, by the way. And then they'll start talking about the Second Amendment. Like it's relevant here. and everything is like, oh my God, they're going to take abortion. Like the Conservative Party of Canada hasn't touched abortion in 50 years. They don't care. Mm-hmm. Like the current leader of their party is dating like a migrant. He's adopted. His parents were gay. It's like, that's our conservative leader. So like, relax. But they always got to do that up because everybody watches Fox and CNN. They're like, they're coming after the gays and the thing. It's like, nobody in Canada is. If anything, mm-hmm. we're coming after the migrants. Oh, and so then as a pushback, you know how there's that thing that anytime a liberal does something, the Democrat or the conservatives would be like, we're not a damn Democrat. We're going to mm-hmm. burn our gas stove for fun. You know, because mm-hmm. they like ban gas stoves because of environment. Yeah. Let's just knee jerk. Whatever they do, we don't do.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get a bunch of these Canadians that start trying to be like acting like American conservatives. And then it seems mm-hmm. like a natural progression because the Canadian market is so small for media and it's so nepotistic.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, dude, it's basically you have to be blowing the right person to get in on there, unless your name is Steve Martin, in which case you've got a shoe in. But other than that. Mm-hmm. So what they do then is they start coming to America, and that's where you get, and I think, was it you that pointed out there was another one I never even knew about, like Steven Crowder, Jordan Peterson. I'd laugh if the Hodge twins were Canadian, but I mean, whatever.
Stefan
Molyneux. He just lives in Mississauga. It's not too far from here. And then all of these Canadians talking about American conservatism. And the only reason it works is because Americans don't read your own like constitution.
No,
as a Canadian, you're like, okay, they keep talking about the Second Amendment. You can't help but Google it one day. And you're like, oh, that's what the Second Amendment is. And you can read it. It's not a complex document. So we don't have any of that, that inside, like emotional or like, you know, nostalgia or nothing. We just go by what we read on the thing. Mm-hmm. That's why some of the best 2A proponents, just Canadians, are like, hey, doesn't it say this? So doesn't that mean this? And then most of it often, you know, you get some gun nuts going, see, at least somebody knows what the hell he's talking about. It's like, yeah, well, you're the one who tried to say, you need it for hunting and killing predators. And that's not what it says in the Constitution either, but whatever. So that's how it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And plus it's a grift. It's way easier not to give a shit about what you're talking about if it's not your country originally.
Right.
I find it a little bit tacky. It's mm-hmm. a little bit tacky. Like Steven Crowder sitting here. I guess he did. Did he eventually get citizenship or no? I don't know, but I'm pretty sure Peterson's still Torontonian.
Yeah, I think Steven Crowder got his citizenship. I don't know about Jordan Peterson. I know he lives down like Nashville or something now, which is like, I don't know, that's more like a conservative state. You know, going from Canada to Tennessee is kind of...
That explains the new Blazers he's been getting. I thought it was... So I was talking about this with somebody some point. I don't remember when or where. Oh, with Adam Krieger.
Yeah.
And I thought it was because he was trying to do the Canadian thing with Don Cherry. But if he's in Nashville, then he's doing the what was the wrestling manager, Mr. Hart, Jimmy Hart. He's doing the Jimmy Hart thing with his Blazers. So that kind of makes sense too. Which if you guys don't know who Don Cherry is, he's like a Canadian. Who's your biggest sports announcer? Like the most popular one of all time.
I think of Mark Madden, but maybe.
Okay. Madden
from Pittsburgh. Okay. Yeah.
He's Canadian Madden. Hockey night in Canada. He's been there for like 50 years. He wore a different colored blazer. Jordan Peterson's stuff is conservative next to Don Cherry's. And it was just, and so if you try to think of an equivalent of that, think of like Madden mixed with the Mouth from the South, Jimmy Hart from WWF. And you put those two guys together and you get a Don Cherry.
All right. Oh, I'm kind of glad you kind of lined all that up because it's very interesting to kind of watch the way that people talk about politics, specifically like libertarians. Libertarians are pretty autistic. You know, it's just like the running joke. And you made this point and it was like, absolutely profound to me. It was so genius that I never thought about it this way. But you had said that, like, people don't have frame when they talk about politics because they just say, okay, well, I'm going to do the opposite of what everybody else is doing. And my buddy Pat, I thought about this, you were talking about this, because, you know, the whole Israel-Palestine is a big deal right now. And I talk about it because, you know, I do a lot of geopolitical analysis. But, like, when it comes to, like, this whole issue, you would think that, you know, the Republicans in our country would basically be like, no, fuck that other country. We're not worried about them. But because the left supports, you know, the Gaza situation, you know, the Palestinians, the right wingers are like, oh, no, we have to support Israel because the leftists hate Israel. So, you know, just reflexively, you can tell these people don't have their own thoughts. It's like they're, as Jordan Peterson would say, possessed by ideology rather than just thinking like objectively through the situation. Think like, okay, well,
see, where you can should that I way be on simpler this? Though. They want to fit in, and they don't have an identity. But he always has to give it that like Jungian nonsense. I agree. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it doesn't make you any better. It actually just makes you easier to manipulate. It's just reverse psychology.
Yeah.
So like your wife is like, hey, can you do the dishes? And you bitch and you moan, and you complain. And then you do the dishes. And she's like, oh, so as long as I can put up with 30 seconds of bitching, he'll do the dishes. And so she just like bitches at you constantly. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes you'll like, you know, you'll tell your wife to do something and she doesn't want to do it. So she does the exact opposite, ends up harming her. Mm-hmm. And all you realize is it just gives somebody a vector to manipulate you if they want to. Oh, how do we get these conservatives to back this? Well, let's just do the opposite thing. It'll make us look stupid. They don't care. Our people are so worried about looking like Republicans to their coworkers, they'll go with anything we said. They hated gas stoves, didn't know gas stoves existed. Everybody has those induction ones now. But now it became an issue. And now it's, you know, because my dad was a preacher and he diddled the kid or something like it. You know, those people that are like progressives because they hate their dad, not because they're actually progressive.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so they'll jump onto the stupidest issues. All of a sudden you watch like a bunch of urbanite hipster lesbians like drinking Bud Light for solidarity. You're like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I remember
like 2 weeks ago, this was something that Kid Rock would be like, you know, shooting a shotgun over. Now he's shooting a shotgun at it. What the hell?
So speaking of that for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I wore this one strictly for you guys. Is Miller Lite a Pittsburgh brand or no?
No, that's a Icy Light is the Pittsburgh brand.
Icy Light. Oh, Jesus. Okay, yeah, in fairness, I know Pabst. I know Miller, Coors, Budweiser. I don't know any other American brands, really. I think there's an Anheuser-Busch.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm surprised you didn't know Icy Light. That's a pretty big one. But yeah, it's Iron City. So, you know, Iron City, Steel City.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, at least you don't know Steam Whistle, though, do you?
No.
See, Steam Whistle's the Canadian beer. There's like a whole train yard right downtown like to celebrate it. It's that big a deal. But I mean, nobody outside of my place is going to know that.
Okay, well, I'm a Canadian whiskey guy, not a Canadian beer guy, so...
Oh, you have no taste either. Jesus.
Oh, get the fuck out of here. You don't like Crown Royal? Oh, okay. This is
Crown Royal is what you give to... It's like the alcohol equivalent of spinners on your rims. It's what people who don't drink booze drink to look like they're aficionados. Because it has the fancy bottle, it has the velvet thing. And it's a Canadian rye, so it's got like, it's a different country's thing. It must be a refined taste. The problem, and I'm not saying this just because like, fuck Canada. I'm saying this because literally our rye industry is fucked. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Scotland, when they make scotch, it has to meet certain things. The grains have to be from Scotland. If it's an Islay, it has to use peat. And America, it has to be from this like alleyway of Kentucky to Louisiana or something like that. Britain, same thing. Irish whiskey has to be done, you know, copper stills, all this stuff. Everybody's got these quality controls. So that when you buy an American whiskey or a British whiskey or an Irish whiskey, even a Japanese whiskey, you know what you're getting. And it's really a matter of who does the best quality or variations on it. Canada has none of that. We just say you have to have rye in the mash. We don't say how much. We don't say if it needs to come from anywhere. We don't say you need to use oaken barrels. We don't say you need to use fresh barrels. We don't see none of this. And because of that, every whiskey you buy in Canada will taste dramatically different. And the one good thing I'll say about Crown Royal is I think they add sugar to it like they do with cheap tequilas, so it tastes better. Because if you compare it to Canadian Club, which has the same, like if you ever had an alcoholic uncle and he breathed on you when he was talking, you know that scent? That's what Canadian Club tastes like.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah, I know. And then there's Weiser's, which is, I find it the most drinkable out of all of them. There's like 18 different brands and every single one is so drastically different. You essentially have to have a specific brand you like, or that's it. As opposed to America, if you guys are like, oh, they're out of Four Roses, you know what? We can settle. We'll get Bullet, or we'll buy Buffalo Trace. You know, and it's like, you know what you're getting. Yeah, right. You don't do that here. Yeah, but I mean, enjoy if you feel like it, it's great. The bags they came in, those velvet bags, were great. If you played D&D, you could always put your dice inside of it.
Yeah, yeah, I think I have whole tons of those. I remember
the dice or the bags.
The bags. Uh-huh. No, I never really played a lot of D&D. Actually, my brother's super into that. But I think it was the first Christmas that my wife lived with me. I had this little shitty Christmas tree, and I had all these Crown Royal bags. I'm like, I know what I'm doing with these. All underneath the Christmas tree. I'm like, look, it's fucking beautiful. Now, to be fair, part of the reason why I love Crown Royal so much is because Dimebag Darrell's my favorite guitar player, the guitar player from Pantera. And I remember just watching the videos as a kid and just them always saying the Blacktooth Grin was a Crown Royal and Coke. And I'm like, you know what? When I grow up, I'm going to be an alcoholic and I'm going to drink lots of Crown.
I mean, fair enough. I know part of it, too, is because where I grew up, Crown Royal is what all the teenagers would drink. Mm-hmm. Like if you had a job, if you were bucking lumber during the summers or a tree plant or something like that, you were affording the Crown. Mm-hmm. None of that Alberta's best for us, which is like, oh, dude, the White Claw of whiskeys was like this Alberta brand. I think it's called Alberta's Best. Do you ever hate brain cells? I got a plan for you.
A big thing when I was younger was all the kids used to get Four Locos, Fireball, and I'm trying to think of the cheap rum. I can't
remember. Oh, Fireball, the Snowboarder's Delight. Yeah, you always have to have that with you.
God, that shit just tastes like straight coolant. I was down in Atlantic City and I had a margarita that had Fireball in it. And like, you ever take a sip of alcohol and just know that you're puking later on? It was like that. I drank that margarita with Fireball in it, and I'm like, this is gonna be coming back up eventually. Party on.
The Jägermeister, the TSN turning.
Oh,
no. Yes, you guys don't have TSN. It's our sports network. The TSN turning point was when they'd always show the highlights. And then this is when the Oilers finally won. It's 1986. Welcome. So I always call it the Jägermeister. Whenever we drank it, we call them the TSN turning point. Because that's when the night shifts dramatically.
Oh, the vibe. God.
The vibe and the stomach.
Yeah. Yeah, dude, it's the worst. Pretty much now, if I have any sip of Jägermeister, it's like my stomach. Whew. And I actually like the taste of Jägermeister. Like, I like black licorice, but like, just if I taste it, I just know I'm going to be sick the next day. I've had too many nights riding in the back of cars where just like, all right, I'm getting the spins now. It's time to pull over.
but like, you're older now and you have a career and you're successful and you have a family and you're learning the same thing that all of us have learned at one point. It's like, I'm going to pay the extra for the booze because there's a physical reason that it costs more. Like the buck a beer draft nights, those are done. I'm never drinking enough. I'll still pay the $13 for the drink. I just remember because your mouth tastes like a dry ashtray. No, I'm not doing that again. No, we're not buying Jose Cuervo. We're buying the Cazadores. We're getting the good tequila. No, we're not buying White Claws. We're going to buy good vodka because, was it bad vodka tastes like vodka? Good vodka tastes like water. And it turns out that headache part is the part that makes you sick. So I'm like, yeah, I don't buy cheap booze anymore or any of the super strong stuff. Like I don't Sambuca, Jaeger. I'm like, no.
Yeah, I can't do vodka at all anymore. It was New Year's 2015, I think, for me and my buddy Paul. I think I was 19 at the time, and we had a bottle of New Amsterdam. He's like, all right, let's get down to this letter on the bottle. And we just kept drinking and drinking and drinking. And then he's like, all right, let's get down to this letter on the bottle. Drinking and drinking and drinking. Surely enough, the bottle's empty. And I was so fucking sick, and I had to do 2.5-hour drive the next day. It was so fucking miserable. I was so hungover. And I'm pretty sure he still has a video of me slapping myself. He's like, Kyle, slap yourself. And I just, bam! Jesus. Not a good idea. I don't do vodka anymore for that reason.
That's my party trick, man. So vodka, if anything under 40%, or I guess is 128, whatever proof is, I can just drink it straight. It literally drinks like water to me. So I just have one ice cube and a glass of vodka. And that's like, I can just sip that back all night. Cause it's just like drinking water and staying hydrated. But that's the problem is because taste wise, it doesn't bother me. The alcohol doesn't burn. The flavor's fine. I mean, it's pretty flavorless anyway, but I'll get drunk before I get like, you know, when you drink too much strong flavored stuff, you're just done.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't drink vodka, but I do sometimes. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I'm old enough now that I can maintain some control over my drinking. So it's not like it's as soon as I have one, that's when it's gone. No, we're not doing a Rakita Law thing here. No offense to the guy. I shouldn't poke fun either. I actually kind of like the streams and A lot of people, dude, his priest, was it his priest is the one that turned him in?
No, oh, I don't know.
Reporting?
I haven't followed it too closely, but yeah.
I mostly follow Dick Masterson because I like watching him yell at people over stuff. But as best I heard, it was his priest. He was like either confessing or doing stuff with them. And I'm sure one of you guys will correct me and call me an idiot. Mm-hmm. And then there was a mandatory reporting requirement, people were like, well, that's fine. If I'm required by law to report this to the authorities and I'm afraid of getting in trouble, I'll do it. Yeah. But like, give him a heads up, because I don't know about you, but you start saying, oh, there's a problem. There's kids and drugs in the house. Like, what's the easiest way to get your friend swatted and shot? Is just like, there's drugs in that house.
Yeah.
Be like, all right, is there a dog out in the yard we can shoot? You know, like maybe give him a heads up. Warning. So yeah, just give him a heads up. And they're like, well, he'll hide the evidence. Well, it's like, well, are you trying to help your friend or are you trying to get him caught? Of course you want to help your friend. You want him to not get shot. Mm-hmm. And then I realized if that was his priest doing this stuff, that's like really bad for religion, right? Because you're sitting here, it's like, this is the man that's supposed to help me when I'm at my lowest. He's my spiritual advisor. When I fall, he's there to help me help myself back up. And he's like, no, turn your ass in.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, dude, you got every chick on Twitter's like, here's my tits, by the way, follow the Lord and don't watch porn.
Yeah. So our mutual friend, Jack Napier and Nuke are both in the chat. And I was on with Jack and Rob on Friday night. What a good time. But
I'll bet.
We were kind of talking a little bit about this, and Owen Wilson, we'll say, because Jack kept calling him Owen, but Andrew Wilson and his obsession with trying to convert the world, which is kind of funny. But you see all these guys now cursing those red pill guys, and it's like, you put this a good way once. I think it's, I'm trying to remember what exactly you said.
Was it Goatsy?
I was thinking about the Goatsy a little bit too, but basically, like, how fucked up things have to be that they're coming over in like the niche of the red pill to, you know, find dragons to slay. It's like, we're like nobodies compared to everybody else.
Not only nobodies, there's nothing attractive. Like, it's not, oh, it's growing. It's good. Yeah. Or it's like, it's got something. It's like, it has none of that. No redeeming qualities. Mm-hmm. We openly talk about subtext literally, which is like autistic as shit. That's not attractive. Nobody likes that. Yeah. We actively like shit post on women because it's funny. Nobody does that. We sit here talking about, and like, just to want to find it, you have to be a guy that's got a lackluster sex life or no sex life, mm-hmm. or, you know, your mom is running the show, or like some real serious defect that you would never admit publicly. And you're like, that's your entrance fee to when you actually have an interest in this stuff. Like, mm-hmm. at this point, I almost think it's hilarious when people start to use like red pill guys as a foil. Cause like, how bad are you? It's like Hillary Clinton, perfect example. Remember that, how she's bitching and moaning and all this stuff? And I'm like, dude, and I think Norm Macdonald had that joke. Everybody hated Hillary Clinton so much that they voted for somebody they hated even more. And I was like, God damn, that's good. Yeah. And that's kind of what it is. Like, you're literally the worst person on earth looking at the second worst person on earth going, look at this asshole, follow me instead.
Yeah,
so of course you're gonna have fun with it, and that's why, you know, links. Every time I see an Insta thought with her tits hanging out, I'll put a link in bio banner like those porn bots.
Yeah.
Every time I see some guy doing some things, I'll make a child diddling joke, because chances are those guys talking about saving the kids usually want to save them for themselves anyway.
Jesus fucking Christ!
I'm just saying. Look, I'm all for protecting children, but the people that do it at the expense of anything else and everything else, I'm like, why are you this obsessed about it?
Yeah, well,
most kids are pretty safe. Like, you can turn it down a notch.
Yeah, the whole QAnon thing was interesting because it was like, oh, we got to save children from pedophiles. It's like, why is there all this awareness for this now? And like Myron, I remember, was saying like, oh, well, if we get so many shares, we'll go live of us, you know, saving kids from pedophiles or chasing down sexual deviants. I'm like, really? Like, you need people to like share your shit to go hunt down pedophiles? Like, I don't know. If it was me and I knew somebody that was a predator, I would take care of that without the social media clout. But now it's like a fucking, you know, how many followers can I get for shooting down this pedophile here? And I'll only do it if you guys super chat me $5.99.
Oh, the Canadian in me, though, I wouldn't go handle it. I'm like, yeah, cops can handle it. You wanted all the guns? Fill your boots, man. You find them. I'm just thinking now of like fresh and fit Chris Hansen. Hey, have a seat. Here's a White Claw. What are you doing here? This chick doesn't have an OnlyFans account. What were you thinking? and then kicks the guy off the podcast, and then cops outside just tackle. To be fair, I would actually watch an episode of Fresh and Fit if it was like Fresh and Fit to Catch a Predator. To think they almost had it, and it would have been great. You can't go on. Pierce Morgan can't shit on you. It's like, dude, how many pedophiles have you caught? None. How many poor families of dead kids have you wiretapped and then exposed on the news? One. All right, well, we're better. And then Fresh and Fit has the moral high ground on Pierce Morgan. Oh, it'd be beautiful.
Oh, my God. We're getting there, man. We're close. I can feel it.
Predators for clout.
That's literally what it was. I remember Myron was doing a stream. I can't remember who the fuck it
was. How many of these things do you watch? I've never actually watched a Fresh and Fit. I caught the clips you guys put on Twitter mostly, but that's it. Do you watch full episodes and like yell at them?
Typically, I only watch if there's people that I like on. I don't watch our individual episodes because there was another clip that I had that I was going to add in where, like, if you watch Fresh and Fit back in 2021 and watch it now and listen to the after hour shows, you're not going to get a big difference between those two things between then and now. So, like, you know, what the hell is the purpose of just watching Myron ask the girls, you know, about what they want in a guy and then yell at them for telling them?
Seems like it would get old really quickly. Mm-hmm. Hi, 23-year-old girl that doesn't give a fuck and is getting money by being nude. Let me tell you about like what a good traditional woman wants to do and settle down. She's like, what the fuck is your problem, man? Mm-hmm. Have you ever tried to tell a 23-year-old what to do? Good fucking luck, man. They're at peak performance. They are top. It's like, who's the UFC guy that was just in the movie? The Irish guy. Why am I drawing a blank?
Oh, Conor McGregor.
Yeah, it's like being, if you're Conor McGregor and you're walking into a place and you're like, hey, my job is to beat people up and I'm the most beat up guy ever right now. He's going to walk over. He's going to, and you're like, hey, man, you know what? If violence isn't the answer, he's going to tell you to shut up and he's going to slap you. That's what it's like telling some 23-year-old, hey, this thottery, man, you aren't going to like it. Shut up. I won't. They won't. But by then they'll be like, I don't like thottery anymore. And it just so happens it's when I turn 30. Now I'm going to blame these red pill dudes about how I can't get a man I like. Oh, yeah. Speaking of which.
Good.
Fuck, we're doing gossip. Damn it. But this one works. So Dr. Babe Dude Love, I don't know if you have any idea who the fuck I'm talking about.
No.
Probably not. When Rollo and I first started, like, fuck, 6 years ago now, Jesus Christ, or 5 years, whatever it was, she was one of the, she's kind of like Gia McCool or Ali or any of the other like traditional conservative girls that are talking shit on Twitter.
Yeah.
That was her, Dr. Babe. She's like, I'm a relationship coach and I can find this and I can do that. She's like the female Pat Stedman. Anyways, a lot of us made fun of her because she filmed a video crying in her car. She's like, I'm 43 and I'm single and I can't find a man and I'm fucked. She was like, she used to be in the Olympics back in the Cayman Islands when she was a kid. And she's like, oh, nobody was good enough for me. The one guy who wanted to marry, I thought I could do better. And now I'm here. Anyway, so we like bullied her off the internet because she was just so goddamn funny with that. She deleted the video. It's my one regret is I didn't save a copy of that video because I would make an ad from it. A really good one. A really good one. And she managed to find a man, took some IVF, got pregnant, instantly comes back online to rub it in all the red pill guys' faces. Now, the reason I'm telling this story is because even our haters benefit from us and what we do. John Anthony lost 40 pounds after Rich Cooper called him a can of smashed assholes for 2 months. Dr. Babe was so mad at us red pill dudes. She went and she started a family and she came back stronger than ever with a sun hat and a summer dress. And I'm like, how awesome is that? Even if I can't, like, Pat Stedman is probably going to get off on good behavior in prison early because of me making those ads, calling him a moron. And I'm here for it. Like, I just like, a rising tide lifts all boats, you know? There's another Reagan term for you.
No, I like that saying, though, because it works. And it's something funny because, like, a lot of guys you'll see complaining on the internet about, oh, look, these women not behaving right. And I think a good takeaway is that, like, look, all these girls are going to stick the landing. Like, how many times do you have to see it? And there's a mutual of ours that I think we've all kind of talked about that's, like, perfect. Nailed it every single time. So, like, are you going to be mad at them? Are you going to yell at them? And like you said, try telling a 23-year-old girl that she'd settle down. She ain't going to listen. And besides, even if she did, like, you know, she's probably not going to be happy. And even if she doesn't, she's still going to stick the landing. There should be some dude that's going to come by and sweep her off her feet with two kids from two different dads and just, you know, take care of her for the rest of her life. She's going to be happy. And, you know, what the fuck are you going to do? Are you going to be pissed off about it? It's just the fucking way of the world.
Yeah. I mean, I even did a Substack on that after, Brandy and Andrew Wilson at their little tiff where she's like, hey, here's some stories about how I got beat up by my man. And then he's like,
after
she slapped him, he's like, well, you had it coming. And I was like, first off, that's the most autistic hill to die on. Like, I get what he's saying. Yeah. If you start assaulting a man, you can't be you can't not expect to be hit back. But at the same time, she's like, actually, it precipitated 3 years of abuse. And you're like, and then obviously, like, I would say if I was just being honest, it's like, well, you were there, which meant you wanted to be there because it's not hard to leave a relationship. Like, it's there's services there specifically to help you. There's family, there's friends. If you're in a situation, it's because you want to be, flat out. But I'm not about to have a fight on the internet over that, explaining how, like, her abuse is her. Like, no, man, that's not the hill you pick to die on. The point of that, though, is actually to Substack because of that, because a lot of guys, when they hear the nailing the landing, the alpha fucks, like all the red pill stuff you guys hear about, whatever. And they always think it means that girls are just sitting there sucking dick at Cancun phone parties for 10 years. And then they settle down with a nice boy at the end. And they forget, like, the bad boy. Yeah. The dude that, like, smacks you around for a couple years, that's still the bad boy. Didn't mean she has to like it. As long as it's a really strong emotion or they stuck around. There's always, like, a reason why somebody sticks around for that. And they're never good reasons and people have learned better. And that's fine. The point is, though, however you get there, it follows the roadmap perfectly, you know? So once you take away that, well, that's a good thing that they're settling with the bad like this. No, it's a bad thing. It's like, it's a thing. They're going to be stuck with the bad boys. And yeah, for every guy who's just like, I'll take you around the world with a yacht. Is there another guy? It's like, yeah, I'm going to take you around this drywall face first. They're both horrible and they're both bad boy stuff. And they both girls kind of work their way out of it by their late 20s and just accept of what it is. Having said that, don't accept a sob story. Who's that new one? The new version of Cake Chits where she's like, yeah, I have to bake my own cake on my birthday. And she's crying, baking the cake. Did you see this one?
Yeah, I didn't watch it, but I saw it making the rounds.
You should. I'm not the one of the ones to tell you. A 3-minute TikTok is this one is worth it. Not for hers, because hers is just crying or whatever. But her ex-husband found it and he stitched himself in there. He's like, hi, don't believe what you see. This chick's an asshole or whatever. And just in case you think you don't know her struggle, actually, I do. I'm her ex-husband. And then he points up and he had, like, you know, how they have the green screen thing behind him, shows the documents. So he shows their separation agreement. He's like, see right here where I have full custody. And here's all the things she has to do to get custody back. And it was like 5 court appointed things that she has to get done to even see her kids.
Yeah.
And he's like, by the way, she owes $21,000 in child support. She's scammed a bunch of people out of like $1 million. She used to fake cancer diagnoses for sympathy on the internet and blah, 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 blah. And he was like, and I'm like, how long does this be? And I look, like, holy shit, there's 2 more minutes of receipts. Jesus. But it was funny because on Twitter, like, every traditional conservative woman's like, yeah, men are trash. I had to make my own birthday cake too. You'll get through it, girl. And you're like, holy shit. It's like right up there with George Floyd. Remember, everybody's like cheerleading, probably the worst example of a human being ever because it fit the narrative. Like, she was
you know, he's like 4 years drug free as of like just a couple days ago.
Wait a minute. That's because, right. And why is there only the one photo of him? There's only that one photo that looks like it's from that this person does not exist.com. I'm starting to doubt if that's a real guy. Like, he probably looked miraculously different, but for the branding, it was better to use that face.
I had a buddy who said, some of us stand with George Floyd and others of us kneel with Derek Chauvin. Yeah. I was like, oh man, that's fucking good.
Whole thing is messed up. Anyways. Yeah. So is this, and that's the part I enjoyed it. And then she got onto another TikTok again, crying about how he's trying to take her, like the Matrix has come. She literally had like the Matrix come back to her feet.
Yeah.
It's just one man trying to ruin my career. It's like, ruin your career with the court signed documentation. Like, fair. And girls are still on her side. It's like, oh geez, yeah, Johnny Depp. No, Amber Heard.
Yeah.
Are we that bored as a society where we're like, let's pick the randomest? We should go back to watching sports all day. Mm-hmm. Remember that back when you used to just yell at Milwaukee because of their piece of shit football team? And now what are they doing? They're yelling at Derek Chauvin.
There,
Kyle Rittenhouse, Cake Tits, Pat Stedman, us. Like, bro. At least with like the Dallas Mavericks yelling at them, there was like a uniform. It's like third generation warfare now with like clout chasing.
Yeah. Well, one interesting thing that I always found about sports was that it's like I don't want to say a pressure release valve, but basically like a male centered kind of space where guys just go there, hang out and drink. And that doesn't seem to be like much of a thing anymore. Like, women get into every space and then women tend to ruin the space. Make
them female friendly.
Yeah.
They turn them into every other female friendly space. As they call it, fake and gay. I think that's what the words they use.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, I think YouTube lets us say that now, thank God.
Yeah, I mean, if they don't, I still usually say something like that anyways. That's part of the reason why I don't get tons and tons of subscribers, probably because of my mouth.
I know what it is, because like you do too many live streams. You do this show too much.
Yeah.
Because I did some experiments because somebody had mentioned something on this on one of like the things like 10 things to throw your channel. Most of those are shit, by the way. But he mentioned that like evergreen videos are for the audience you want. And live streams are for the audience you have. And I'm like, that's a clever way to look at it. And then sure enough, I went through my stats, see what, like, how many people subscribe because of a live stream, how many new viewers, and you compare the two. I'm like, that actually makes sense. So yeah, the long form content you make or the short form content, that's to attract a new audience. And then once you have them here, the live streams are to entertain that audience. This is why I'm trying to do more scripted stuff and less live stuff. I try to find a balance anyway. I don't know where the balance is.
Yeah, I think I've had a piss poor balance because I used to do all pre-records and I started doing live streams and it's just one or the other. It used to be when I would do live streams, they'd do really good. And then everyone kept saying like, oh, no, you should just do all live streams. And I started doing all live streams and then it was like cool and then just tapered off.
Yeah, well, I hate that. You should do more of these. It's like, why? That's the part that I hate. Like, what's the justification for it? What's the rationale? Because maybe I'm on board with it, but I don't know. But the same thing. At the same time, you don't want to do no live streams either. Because when I was talking with Adam last week, he's got like 180,000 subscribers. So he's a bigger channel. And his live stream got like 150 concurrent viewers, which is good. It's great. More than most. And then I looked over at mine and they're usually like 270, which is small compared to like Rolo, who gets like 1,000 or 1,200, or Tim Pool, who gets 30,000. And the idea is like having a consistent long form content like that will help keep like that concurrent number of audience members. That's a big deal. Those are like,
because you're engaging with them.
Yeah. You're engaging with them and they're the ones that watch everything. Mm-hmm. And so you don't want to ignore one at the expense of the other. As far as about, I'm comfortable with where my balance is, but at the same time, I don't have enough confidence about it to tell you like, oh dude, do about 50-50, one video a week plus a live stream. I'm like, maybe.
Well, so I was talking to Rob and Jack about this. I just finished editing a X3 bar review because they put out a squat belt and performance band. So it's literally like a band and a platform setup.
Yeah.
And the squat belt basically like it wraps around your waist and then there's hooks and then the band goes underneath the platform and then the band wraps up around the bar. And then, you know, it's basically just target your quads. So you'll do like a split squat with the bar between your legs and it really hammers your quads. Whereas before it used to be like, you would just hoist the bar up over your chest and then do a split squat, you know, with one foot back. And I was sitting there editing all the music into video and stuff. And then, you know,
Lowe's knows you've got a job to do and we help get it done. With the MyLowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more with volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
You make it sound like a farmer squat with a lot more tech.
Sort of.
Am I mistaken?
No, if I had like a picture of it, I'd show you, but
okay.
It's literally like a little metal platform that's probably like this big and it's all with bands. And like I said, they made this belt. So I wanted to do an updated video on it and just like the editing for it, man, editing videos is fucking tedious. I know you know this probably much better than I do, but like I'm sitting there adjusting the volume when I'm talking and you'd think I would have like my own band's music downloaded to my computer. But I fucking don't. So I had like two or three songs. I'm like looking all over the place. I have a CD in my hallway of our EP, but then like all the other stuff is just like singles. So I'm looking around, I'm like, where the fuck is all my music? So I was able to find it, but yeah, it's just like a very, very delicate balance. And then I wanted to add like a 2-second video because I messed up saying something. I left it in the video and I wanted to just do like a little funny pause with TV stack to make it look like I was retarded or something like that. And that alone took me like a few minutes to get that edit just right. It was such a pain in the ass, but like when I was watching, I'm like, oh, that actually works and it looks good.
Yeah. Well, I know that editing is such a slog. That's why I like two things, templates and separating your workflows. That's the one thing. You were talking about the audio's not right here, but the editing's not getting you to change it. Mm-hmm. I found from editing the book and doing that part of it, it's always best to segregate those as much as possible. So my audio, I always do the audio first. Mm-hmm. I'll put it into a different program. I'll do all the mixing I need to do, get all the levels right. So by the time I bring it into my editor, all I have to do is worry about cuts. That's it. And I find that saves a ton of time because then I never have to worry about the sound. And then for the editing, all I have to worry about is like what kind of timing I want to cut, which tends to correlate with audio anyway, mm-hmm. which I find is useful. But when I do it that way, then I find it's one piece, it's good. And this piece is good. Then the overlays is good. Then the then the effects and transitions that I want to do, and then it's good. And then I do a last minute walkthrough, and I usually get bored about halfway through watching my own shit. And then I just release it and then put it on like 5 times play on VLC to make sure it's good as I'm uploading it. But yeah, it's one of those things. It's like writing. Like I still don't consider myself a good writer, but yeah. I definitely consider myself a better writer than I was. And I found out the trick was just write like a million words. And then eventually you're going to get like 10 good ones together. And I think I've gotten a good 10 words together. I'm pretty impressed. Oh, next step's another 20. I'll see you in another million words. But you know what I mean? As you just practice, they get more comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so one thing about video editing, though, that I noticed is that it's like a big, like you said, it's a slog. So I know you run your Minecraft channel, but to me, it seems like those sandbox games are just like grindy for the sake of the grind. And I mean, I haven't like spent enough time playing Minecraft or anything like that, but there was this one game called Evolution or something like that. And literally, you sat there as like an ape and then you like learn different traits and then you would make babies essentially. And it's just like this.
Those ones are a grind. Minecraft's different because it's not a game. It's I call it 5 toys and a trench coat.
Mm.
That's something Sid Meier, the guy who created SimCity, talked about, the difference between a game and a toy. A game has rules and it has a goal and it has a winner.
Sure.
Minecraft doesn't have those. It's like Legos. Legos aren't a game. They're a toy. They're something you play with. You create your own version of.
Sure.
Like rules out of it. You make your own games out of the toys. And so Minecraft has multiple ones of those. So it's just different. But I agree. The ones you're talking about, the progression tree grindy type games. And that's came from once big business and IPO started happening in the gaming industry. There's some mm-hmm. great lectures on gaming as an SaaS, software as a service, which sounds weird. But then when you realize that explains a lot of modern gaming, like for example, that's why games are finished now, unfinished, buggy, and everybody's like, why this game? Like, why did you release this game? It's because games cost now like $1 billion to make and 10 mm-hmm. years of time. And so what they do to offload the risk for the company is they get it like 70% finished and then they release it. And if it gets enough pre-sales and sales to make back a certain percentage of income, I don't know what the calculations are, then they put resources towards finishing and polishing the game, which is crazy because now every game released is a piece of shit. And they're relying on you to give them enough money to finish it. So you have to really like the IP, which encourages them to make existing IP that you're psyched for and put hype out marketing campaigns on it. Because nobody's going to play Diablo 4 if it's a piece of shit mess. Mm-hmm. But they will because, oh, you love this game. Here's a bunch of hype. And you're like, yeah, and you fall for it and you feel like an idiot.
Yeah.
And they do all that stuff. And yeah, for the grindy stuff, that's the other thing I figure because... Mm-hmm. What I realized between ESG scores, getting yourself certain funding from venture capitalists and stockholders, is that the customer is not the customer anymore for a lot of these developers. The customer is shareholders and the customer is VC, like people who invest money, governments, whatever, ESG. So when they run some weird metrics that cause some weird, like Diablo, for example, had this great one where they tried to increase concurrent, like the amount of playtime, how long a session was for people. By something like 2 minutes. And they did that by slowing down the loading screen. So the game would already be loaded, but they would extend it just a little bit longer, you know, just squeak a couple more seconds of playtime out of it. And little things like this, and they got caught. And same thing with the progression ones. Well, they make this meaningless progression to give you the feeling of progression without actually progressing. which taps into our lead. Like, we have a completionist, like, you want to finish things. That's in your brain.
Yeah.
And so they tap into that, but making everything non-finishable. So it's not fun anymore. It's engaging. That was the other big thing they moved. We don't make games fun anymore. We make games engaging, and it's better. And that's why I had a tweet a little while where it's like, why would you want to make games fun like the arcade machines when you can make them engaging like slot machines? Because that's kind of what they're doing now. They're just gambling simulators.
Yeah.
Yeah, Minecraft's not really like that, though. But, I mean, in general, most games are. And that's why I don't play a lot of new games. And the few that I do play, I've had a really bad experience. And I wrote them off as a business expense, but that's it. I wouldn't buy them.
Yeah, I can't stand that. And I think you and I kind of went back and forth once about World of Warcraft. And I really enjoy World of Warcraft because, like, the world and everything, there's a lot to do. But I feel like there's a good sense of progression because you have levels, skills, different areas and stuff like that. But like the games where it's just like the grind for the sake of the grind, it bores me to tears. I can't do it.
Ark Survival is the worst example of that.
Oh, really?
You'd have to take to. So if you wanted to train it, like make a dinosaur and tame a dinosaur, you had to knock it out either with a club or like in the things that knock you out with like a dart. Anyways, I can't remember the name.
Tranquilizer.
Thank you. Son of a bitch. It's one of those days. But then you would have to feed it a certain kind of berry every 30 seconds for like 12 hours. And you also had to walk around to make sure like velociraptors didn't try to eat the ass out of your T-Rex while you're trying to train them. So if you weren't paying 100% attention for like 12 hour period, the thing would never get trained. And sometimes you could speed up the thing, but still it was just basically grind for the sake of grind. It was just ridiculous. And they're always so buggy that you would eventually get caught behind a cliff anyway, and the thing would suffocate. You're just like, as soon as I saw that game, I played it for a bit. And after like 10 hours of that, I was like, no, we're not doing this shit. but I mean, concurrent users and the amount of playtime per session is huge on these things. So it looks great. And then, of course, you get diversity and inclusion writers and you get them to write this stuff. So that looks really great to investors. Oh, wow. They're doing the DEI thing. And then the ESG guys are like, well, your score is higher. You can get some VC from our funding here. Mm-hmm. And then the only one that loses out on this is the consumer.
Yeah.
And as much as everybody goofs around about games, dude, games are they're bigger than Hollywood and like the music industry and the movie industry combined. The only industry that's bigger than games is porn. And even then, not that much bigger, I don't think. Like, I'd have to go look it up, but I'm pretty sure you give us another 10 years, I bet you gaming industry can take over from the hub. I bet you anything.
You really think?
I think so. I think people's need to have fun and be engaged, and the fact that the third world's coming here, although the third world coming here might be why it affects the porn hub too. I think so. I think people like, because you can only, what, like 10 minutes a day? Even if you're chronic, maybe 60 minutes a day of jerking it. But games, you can play it for 8 hours a session.
Well, yeah, and then, I mean, there's like a whole industry around people just watching other people stream games. So there's that too.
Guilty as charged. Doing that today, and I'm going to do that when we're done here.
So you reminded me of a game that I actually really liked because of like the woke stuff. I don't know if you ever played any of the Mass Effect series, but they kind of got.
I played number two.
Okay, well,
oh, and three.
Okay, yeah, well, the one, two, and three, playing the whole trilogy is just fantastic. That like those games ruined story games for me because just I thought the story was so good. Especially because it like continues from 1, 2, and 3. So Mass Effect Andromeda was released after all this, and this
was
like
the first ugly girl with the cross eyes, and yeah, because they didn't know how to render video.
Yeah.
At the heart of Mass Effect Andromeda is a question.
Let me see.
How far will we go?
Oh, no, hold on.
Too far, sir.
What brings a pathfinder to our humble port, Ventarev? Name ring any bells? What's he to you? And don't lie to me. Just point me to where you're holding him and there won't be any trouble. There won't be. Drop it now! You first. Get out.
Not any emotion. They're soulless.
It's like Netflix.
Yeah.
Father's dead. He made me his successor. Alec is dead. Sorry, my face is tired from dealing with everything
And right now, I just want.
But yeah, that's what that reminds me of. Every single time I've heard you bring that up, I'm like, oh my God. So cheap. You know what? Yeah.
Way cheaper to produce that.
They released the game like that, and then, you know, a whole bunch of people bitched about it. A whole bunch of people bought it. I'm like, all right, yeah, we'll fix it up. And then, like, the game's reputation was just trashed after that. And Cyberpunk 2077 went through something same similar. Thing. Yeah.
It's sad, but that's the thing. And that's just the way the incentives align right now. And until there's going to be a giant 1982 video game crash again, which everybody says it's coming, but I swear to God, man, people talking about the video game crash is like talking about the American Civil War. Like every 2 years, it's right. Missed it again, or nuclear Armageddon. Oh, the Ruskies this time. It's like, dude, 1986 was a long time ago. The Ruskies ain't shooting shit now. But everybody wants things to break so badly. It's like, it's not. It's just going to plot along. It's going to go from a $1 trillion industry to an $800 billion industry. It's going to be like the music industry now, where like nobody's heard a Queen song in 10 years because their DMCA is so tight-lipped. It's at the point that they're memory-holing it. That's the one that's getting me now. Like, I realized somebody was bringing that up, how Martin Scorsese owned the rights to Flash Gordon. Awesome adventure serial from like the 40s, and it was like big, and they made a thing in the 80s from it. And George Lucas wanted to buy it. And he's like, or buy the rights to it, or get a license. He's like, no. So he's like, fine, I'll make my own sci-fi drama with hookers and blackjack. And he made Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where, and like nowadays it's that, like, you cannot tell a Zoomer about Dick Tracy. He has no idea what Dick Tracy is. No, who's the guy who played Dick Tracy in that movie? He actually owns the rights to it, and he just won't do anything with it. And music guys, like, nobody does anything with like boomer music anymore, which there's some good stuff out there. And so everything's getting memory hold. I almost can't blame the Zoomers for not knowing anything before 2007.
Yeah. Kind of reminds me.
And gaming is going to get there soon enough where it's like, I don't know what the equivalent would be, but some version of the good stuff that used to be out there, people don't even know about it. And it's gatekept somehow. Like, as soon as they could figure out a way, I guess Nintendo does that now with copyright strikes on people who just play their games online, which is kudos to them. If I was sitting on they're sitting on like infinite money from their Super Mario Brothers in the 80s days, and they're just like, we're going to do whatever we want, and I don't give a fuck.
Yeah. It was like N64 was like the last real peak for Nintendo. And then after that, they're like, all right, we release like Wii Sports, where you can make a dude who looks like you, except for like an NPC. We'll just cash in on this.
Oh, and those controllers. You just see, people are so hooked on the N64 controller because the way the analog stick work is different tech than PlayStation controllers and that. And I guess it doesn't have drift and doesn't wear down over time, but the parts are plastic, so they do wear down. There's people that like get a CNC machine to learn to drill and manufacture the steel parts to replace the plastic parts to them. And the problem is now they're buying all the N64 controllers they can, so they could put them into like the new housing and frame. And there's like a shortage of them out there. And speedrunners are paying like thousands of dollars for one of these controllers because you can do 1,000 runs of N64 games without ruining it. And I just started to laugh. I'm like, that's awesome.
Yeah, my brother has a whole room full of GameCube and Nintendo stuff. Yeah, you know what, Jack, you're right. Wind Waker and Smash Bros. On GameCube were great. And so was Luigi's Mansion. I loved all those games. Well, the one thing funny about the Wii was with the remote, the videos of people fucking throwing them through the wall and shit.
Because
had to put on the wrist wrap. And, you know, some people were just more brave. They were, you know, considerate of their environment. I did that in my brother's house. Like, as soon as he bought his house, I remember right into the wall right above his fish tank. I felt kind of bad.
I would. Worst I had was a buddy did that. He fell over and he landed on my my Gibson Flying V, snapped it in half. I was so unimpressed. 69 reissue. I loved that thing. And it was like just plain like piano key black with the white fret. And I was like, oh, I love that thing. You can't sit it on your knees. So you can't play Wonderwall at the fucking campfire. It was perfect.
I'm looking around at the guitars that I got in my room, and I probably got a few $1,000s. Yeah, if that happened, I'd probably want to break somebody's neck.
I was so mad. I was almost as mad because I told you about that story too, where my mom took my '76 Fender DeVille and she gave it away to somebody for helping her throw out some stuff. Yeah. You're in the military. You don't need a vintage tube amp anymore. It's like, I'll kill you, woman. Speaking of your birthday's coming up, I got to go send her. Send her how she's the greatest mom ever. I should maybe remind her of this in the card.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Anyways, I was interrupting. We were supposed to laugh at libertarians again, or what are we doing here?
I don't know. We're just kind of going along.
Fair enough.
We're good.
I should have warned you. I have a tendency to help you really drift off script unless you're like a really tight hosting.
I usually have like a loose idea what I want to talk about. We've hit a lot of the topics. So, Canada stuff. So how is it with like immigration and everything up there? Because I remember you said, there's a park near me that's like infested with people now.
Well, that's homelessness. That's a different issue.
Yeah. Okay. Between the two.
How far back do you want to go on this? Like I can expand upon this a lot. So you're going to have to try and like help me guide me here to where you want to go.
Start wherever you want.
The part that gets me is, you know how conspiracy theories used to be conspiracies and you had to have like the pin board with all the things and like tinfoil on the hat. And now it's just like, well, you go to his website, you read his policy document and he signed this. It kind of takes the fun out of discovering conspiracy theories because now it's just government policy.
Yeah.
Reason I mention this is because there's a website, you can go there right now, called centuryinitiative.ca. Mm-hmm. It is a NGO that's plan is to increase Canada's population to 100 million by 2050. It's 40 million now. It was 30 million in 2015, if I'm not mistaken. I could have a couple of years off, but I generally speaking, that's right. And the whole idea was because GDP is great. And if you look at the board of directors, it's a bunch of like wealthy Toronto, Montreal, Beltway people. And Dominic Blank, which if you've never heard of him, I don't blame you. He's a McKinsey & Co. Senior VP, I think he was. And if you guys don't know McKinsey & Co., they're the consulting firms like Deloitte or PwC, which if you've done business in any major city, you know about them. They're always the ones that handle your audits. They're the ones that do your SOC 2 certifications, all that kind of stuff. Anyway, they got in a bit of trouble with the UN because they were bribing African warlords for certain rights to this, that, or the other thing. They were bribing Canadian companies like Bombardier to get preferential treatment for the government, shit like that. So these people were like, this is like literal, like the evil corporate, like that's the evil corporate, like this is the guy. This is the guy that, you know, Ed 209, here, that's him. So he was the director.
It's not a J, is it?
No.
Okay.
Oh, no, that's the thing. They're not. Like he's, that's the thing. So he's a Nigerian national, or no, a London national, Ugandan born. Policies for Canada. And Trudeau made him the ambassador to China. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, bro, really? And then you started seeing like we had a huge amount of Chinese immigrants coming in. And then China kind of shut that off because they realized they're losing all their talent. So they shut off their ability to expatriate. And now we have a huge amount of India. I'm going to be surprised if he's the ambassador of India now.
Okay. Can we put a pin in this real quick?
Yeah.
Okay. So I have a question when it comes to like China and Canada, because the US, and I'm sorry, this is like completely off topic, but it just kind of sprung into my mind. Hmm. When it comes to like the US and China, a lot of people get this mixed up because like the US is actually very, very hostile to China. And my understanding is actually Canada does a little bit of this with the US as well. So like the US will sail warships through Taiwan Strait about to the tune of maybe once, maybe twice a month. And my understanding is actually Canada actually joins in on some of these military drills right off the coast of China. And I remember seeing you talk about like Chinese espionage with the Canadian government. So it's just, it's a giant clusterfuck because it's like on one hand, the US and Canada are together running military drills right in China's face. But then on the other hand,
military exercises.
Yeah. But then on the other hand, there's like this subversive Chinese element between Canada and China. It's a very, very like,
well, we're not game of risk. There's not just like, you can't just go all or nothing. Everything is got so many moving parts that they all move in all random directions. But yeah. So 2012, CSIS, our version of the NSA and CIA, came out with this report talking about how a bunch of our MPs, our version of the House, not the Senate, but the House. What do you guys call those guys?
Congress?
Yeah, the members of. There's senators, and then there's the other ones.
I should know this. How do I not know this off the top of my head?
All right, whatever. Anyways, in Canada, we call them MPs, members of Parliament. Okay. And turns out there was a bunch of them that were being paid and bribed and money was being funneled into their campaigns from Chinese nationals, which they're like, this is a big deal. You have foreign nationals affecting our elections. At the time, it was a conservative government. They just kind of like, whatever. And then Trudeau's government, they came out with it again and again. And like every couple of years, like, hey, by the way, China just bought elections and they're buying a ton of stuff here. They bought about $1 billion worth of Vancouver real estate for a bunch of different processes, and they kind of got it for really unscrupulous things. There is the big housing development in Toronto right now. It's like a couple square block area. Hong Kong developers have been building those for the last like 15, 20 years. And for some reason, it's like sole source contracting. So they're making billions off of that. The Chinese real estate market, like Canada's real estate was so bad, we actually did a thing into foreign people buying property here. Because in China, they're always worried about the economy is going to tank. Like it's going to blow up. They can't keep it forever. So what they do is they go to Singapore and they launder money out of the country there through the gambling apparatus, which as long as you keep it to a certain amount, you tend not to draw too much attention. And so they'll buy Canadian real estate. They were trying Americans too, but you guys had it way harder for them. But for us, we're just like, yeah, it's all yours, man. Mm-hmm. It got to the point there that you were entering with places that like Vancouver's real estate was just insane at the time, which is quaint by today's standards, but they didn't have enough of a population to like run a school in an area that should have enough for two. And so they found out is essentially they're just, it's just like a bunch of holding money for Chinese, rich Chinese people. Mm-hmm. And so they did some studies, how much of this is actually done. And they're like, oh, it's fine. It's only like 5 to 10% of the Canadian housing market is owned to offshore Chinese money. Empty houses. And we're like, really? That's kind of a big deal. Because most of the boomers there, they want property values up. So they always NIMBY the shit out of their neighborhoods. So that's the relationship with China. And then as far as us going to saber rattle with them when we deploy, it's because Canada is a little insecure about our military, as we should be. We were never like, we punch above our weight, but like we've been riding that World War One glory a long time. Long time.
Yeah.
And a lot of this stuff we get to go. Because, yeah, we're part of the fleet. We get to be part of the big guys. We're that little scrappy guy beside the bully that talks shit because he knows the bully's going to beat the guy up anyway. Mm-hmm. Like my deployment, that was one of the big red pill moments for me when I'm like, yes, we're going to go stop terrorism and find drugs and stop the heroin trade and pirates. And this is going to be great. Mm-hmm. Turns out the only reason we were there, it was poppy growing season. It was cyclone season. So DAOs aren't out smuggling things. Poppies weren't being turned into heroin. But we're out there because the Americans are like, yeah, you guys can run this deployment because there's nothing going on. Nobody wanted it.
Yeah.
And I was like, now I understand. Remember I was talking before about that 51st state Canadian insecurity thing?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was my deployment. And yeah, so when I see this stuff, I don't think we really hate China at all. I think we love China. Our prime minister is talking about he wants to be China. They're such a great country. Like they just snap their fingers and everything gets fixed forever. And then he got a majority and you're like, well, thank God we don't have that.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because like China seems to be one of the most misunderstood things. And I love talking about this and looking into it because it's so misunderstood. But like, you know, their population, I think 30% of their agriculture is still done by hand. They build these ghost cities and tear them down to make it look like they're doing stuff. And like, yeah, they are kind of getting out of the third world. But I mean, they still have like this incredibly poor population. And like a lot of their real estate, you know, same deal. They have a whole ton of bubbles. And then there's some projections when it comes to like their population is going to be halved within the next like 10 to 20 years.
Yeah. That one child policy did not help at all.
Exactly. But I mean, some of this stuff almost sounds like the inevitable civil war where Tim Pool can't wait to tell you about the civil war that's coming. So he could sell you, you know, food buckets of 52 pounds with freeze dried marshmallows and shit in your basement. So like, it's so tough to put your finger on because, you know, from the Austrian school of economics perspective, we're always like, oh yeah, the big crash is right around the corner. You know, as soon as 2020 happened and they started printing all this money, we're like, oh yeah, everything's going to collapse. We're going to go into hyperinflation. But then it like,
well, cause they always assume that we don't change based on changing data. I think that's the problem with all of these like doom and gloom predictions.
Sure.
Is that nobody's going to do anything until it's too late. It's like, dude, as soon as things start to change, people start to change. And so when you're never going to see a giant crash or a huge civil war, you're going to see things slowly degrade. Like cyberpunk, I think is much more realistic than civil war, where just your quality of life goes down. Canada, great example of that. Absolute horrible economic policies for the last 8 years. No civil war. We had one protest that was very peaceful. Like they were shoveling snow. I'm just saying, shoveling snow for the city.
Yeah.
But quality of life has gone down. Real estate's gone up. It's all just slow, subtle sliding into that, to the point now where even people who are well off are feeling kind of shitty right now. Mm-hmm. And that's why everybody hates Trudeau. Dude, I feel bad now. I almost want to take his side because everybody's shitting on him for their YouTube channels. And I'm like, you weren't here 6 months ago. There's immigrants that moved to Canada in like 2021 bitching about how immigration is too high. It's like, what the fuck? But yeah, that's why you don't get the Civil War. In China, yeah, they had unlimited labor. Mm-hmm. And they used that to take most of the world's capital and farm it there. And then they had to feed and clothe and economically handle those guys without any sort of capitalism. So they spent all of that capital they had built on maintaining the status quo, and they're eventually going to run out of money. And so Canada, and so China's going to have a decline. Plus the fact they've lost so many people from emigration, they have a huge brain drain problem. I don't think it's going to end up with some kind of weird Chinese launching nukes at Taiwan kind of thing, but yeah, they're going to decline in the same way that America's declining or Canada's declining or Australia's declining.
Well, it seems like they kind of hit that point where, like, when you start to industrialize, people start to have just way less kids because it becomes too expensive. And to your point also, China imports, I think it's like, I can't remember the exact number. I know it's in the billions of dollars. I want to say it's either $3 or $9 billion of food from the U.S. So, and because a lot of China's deserts, so they can't really grow food. So part of their incentive for wanting to end the Ukrainian war was so that way they could get the grain from Ukraine, so that way they could feed their people.
Bread basket of Europe, or isn't it bread basket of Asia? They call it Ukraine or bread basket of Europe.
I think it's bread basket of Europe.
Because I know for wheat, like America and Ukraine are like the, and Canada, I think, are the three top producers in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're a big deal. They're just farmland everywhere. That's where everybody's fighting over it.
Yeah. Well, when it comes to, like, the Taiwan stuff too, it always makes it cracks me up because ever since 2022, when our Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi went over there and did a little trip, they've been blockading the island like every other week. And Kevin in the chat actually pointed that out to me, that like sometimes they'll hype up the blockading of Taiwan to fuck with the markets because people like buy or sell off certain stock according to the news. But like Taiwan is a very, very defensible island. I mean, a lot of their shore is really rough. And so, you know, if they tried to fly planes over Taiwan, they get shot down easily. The U.S. is giving them aid. I'm sure Canada's probably giving them a little bit of money.
Oh, that's not the issue though. It's they have the same situation as Iran does. Like Iran, America could glass it tomorrow if it wanted to. Mm-hmm. But, and they've run some simulations over this. Remember we talked about it during our deployment. The Straits of Hormuz has something like 60% of the world's oil traveling through it. And they could easily mine up that area and run fast patrol boat RPG attacks. Very minimal input from the state to get those things running. And they would cripple the insurance industry to the point that nobody would insure oil tankers anymore. And it would cut off just enough oil supply that would basically, like, yeah, America could glass Iran, but Iran could move everybody else back to the 1700s. Taiwan's kind of that same thing, because what is it? Most advanced microprocessors are made through there. Yeah. And so, yeah, that's why everybody wants it. It's because, yeah, computers run the world right now. And if you want a computer, chances are Taiwan's going to be what supplies you with the stuff you need for it.
Right.
Like Japan and the Netherlands. Those are the two countries. If you ever wanted to cripple computers, take out those two countries. Because Taiwan makes the chips and the Netherlands makes the only machines in the world that can make those chips, which I didn't know about. That's why Jack's sitting here also happy with his government subsidized paycheck, running his mouth on YouTube once a week.
Yeah.
Well, but that's the thing. So like China wants that because that's a great strategic goal. It's the same as the rare earth minerals that they've been buying mines across Canada and Australia, Africa. Mm-hmm. Because if you control the rare earth minerals, you get the vertical integration thing, right? And so they in the States, they both want Taiwan, but they don't want to fight over it, because as soon as they start dropping bombs, they kind of ruin the whole reason it's there. So you get into these weird situations where it's a lot of saber rattling, a lot of parading, a lot of, we'll send a ship through there. We'll do an embargo for 2 days. We'll fuck with the markets. It's because we can't really fight right now. It's like those African tribes that used to stand toe to toe against each other and do like elaborate dances to scare the other side.
Yeah.
Which you kind of got to laugh about this, because everybody knows it's like nuclear war. Nobody wants to throw the nukes, but we all have to show how tough we are with the nukes. So let's just start doing nuclear tests in Nevada. That'll teach them. Or just like my dog, when he's hungry and I'm not feeding him right away, he'll start pulling laundry out of the bin and throwing it around the house. It's not going to hurt anything, but he knows if I attack him, he's going down.
Yeah, you got to treat your woman like a communist, just like you said in the beginning. It was beautiful. But when it comes to like Taiwan potentially being taken by China, the point of them needing food, right? Like they have to import a lot of food. Wouldn't really make sense for them to like nationalize the chips. And I'm not saying you said this, but like, I think a lot of people freak out about that. So like, let's say they do take Taiwan, then like the rest of the world could be like, all right, well, fuck you. We ain't giving you no food then. And you know, they have a very, very large population and they don't have a lot of people.
Yeah, you see how that mutually assured destruction kind of escalates. Nobody really wants to do that.
Right. Yeah, so it's just kind of like you said, just a whole bunch of saber rattling, making noise to make everybody feel like they're, you know, they're the man in that moment.
And that was the whole reason for the globalist project. The whole reason for globalism that came out of the Second World War was to avoid situations like this. The idea is if we're all a single market, what's the five things? The free flow of labor, the free flow of capital, the free flow of water, the free flow of energy, and was food the last one? I think so. Anyways, the whole point of that is you make all of these things a complete one world market, then nobody goes to war because we don't have to be, well, we'll cut off the food supply unless you give us the microchips kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Which it turns out it works great as long as you have a superior military force that's spending trillions of dollars to keep the waterways clear and is the global military hegemon. Which, so it's great. While America's doing great, we're doing great. But the day that America stops spending as much as every other country in the world combined on the military, it's not going to be so great. And that's why people now are talking about that little push for, you know, instead of maybe just Taiwan being the only chip manufacturer, maybe everybody should be making chips, or maybe everybody should be trying to make enough food to supply their own supply, which South Korea was doing that. That's how they kind of got themselves out of poverty. They followed the Japanese model in the 60s, where they realized if you wanted to industrialize, you have to have 100% of your own internal food supply. You can still trade, but you should be able to sustain. And then use that for light manufacturing, then heavy manufacturing, and then electronics, and then service economy. And then that's how you ended up with South Korea turning in like 15 years from a backwater rural place to like a technological hegemony. That's how Japan did it. Japan was so well at it, they thought they were going to take over. You don't remember the 80s, but in the 80s, everybody's like, Japan is the next America. They thought for sure by 1997, Japan's going to be looking at America number two. And it's kind of like how they look at China now. Oh, they're taking over for America. Turns out you can't really take over for America. There's too much shale gas and minerals and military there for somebody to take it over with their 3,000-year-old empire that hasn't changed since the Roman days.
Right. Yeah, I have a book saved in my Audible called Unrivaled. I forget the name of the author. And basically, he lays out the case for like why America is going to save the world's sole superpower. I think a lot of people want something big to happen so that way they could tell their audience that, you know, this is happening right now and the whole world's going to end. Like when you hear people talk about Trump and Biden on foreign policy, it's always like, oh my God, this never would have happened under Trump. You know, Biden's ruining the world. We're not going to have a country. I'm like, I think it's a little bit more calm than you guys think. And like a lot of the shit just is kind of the momentum and the way that shit's going.
I guarantee their YouTube careers won't be viable in that new world. So maybe you don't want this. I don't think they do. I think they're just saying that because, like, if I piss you off, you'll watch my stream. I hate that shit. Mm-hmm. That's why Doom and Gloom sells so well. Why do you think Tim Pool wants revolution every 15 minutes on his damn show? Well, he says, Murphy. Hey, everything's going to go. It's going to be okay. It's going to be a little hard, but we'll get through it together. Nobody's going to watch that, but they're coming for your kids. Oh, everybody watches that. Hey, I have kids. I don't want them to come after him. I better watch what the Beanie Man says. And I'm not even poking fun at him. From an entrepreneurial standpoint, if you want 30,000 people on a live stream, that's what you got to do. Mm-hmm. I get it.
Yeah. Well,
why do you have to act like one of those goofy pickup artists? Well, that's where the women are going.
Yeah. Well, why do you rob banks? Because that's where the money is.
Exactly.
Jack brought up this point to me, and because I had said on his stream.
Here, Jack doesn't have points. Let's clear that up right now. He stole it from Nuke. Guaranteed he stole it from Nuke.
Now, well, you know what? Nuke never asked me this, but Jack had said, are you having this person on because you want to have a conversation with them? Or are you having them on because of the clout? And that was a little bit of an eye opener for me because I never had to consider that. I'm like, so you which know, is that's, it? Yeah. Well, Ryan,
why am I here?
Huh? I told you the last stream that I actually didn't like. I used to not like you at all. When I first saw Ryan, I'm like, man, fuck this guy. And then over time, I'm like, you know what? He's one of my favorite people on the internet. I like this guy a lot.
You had it right the first time. You had it right the first time.
Nah, I agree, I don't by the way. About that. Yeah.
I actually know why. One of the reasons he says that, I've seen that. Like, I've done collabs with bigger people or small, like Kriegler's 180,000, Rolo's 120 some thousand.
Yeah.
I've had big channels, small channels, did not affect growth one bit. I don't think the clout collab does a fucking thing unless you have no talent. If I have no skills whatsoever to talking to a mic, if I bring a bunch of interesting people, ask them a question and then sit back while they run their mouths about China, it can fill the content up.
Yeah.
I call it the Lex Friedman or what's that? Who's that British guy that Rolo hates? Chris Williamson. Yeah.
Oh, Chris Williamson.
Let's call it pulling a Chris.
Yeah.
He's talentless, but he has British accent, so it sounds like, you know, oh, Jesus, that must be intelligent.
Yeah, what is going accent. On with the men to die?
It's like America assumes that everybody in the UK has to go to Oxford for once in their life. Yeah. you don't become a man until you graduate from Oxford, and then you leave there with your Hugh Grant accent. It's like, fuck off.
Yeah, well, it was kind of funny because my friend Sam, who you blocked, and I think you gave him a goatee too, which my buddy Adam was bringing.
Oh, was
he
the one you sent me the DM about?
Yes, yes.
Oh, okay. That's yeah, funny.
He had said, oh yeah, man, I get all these followers from doing other shows. I'm like, yeah, I mean, I've gone on a bunch of other shows, but like, I don't know. I can't say I've seen like a huge bump in subscribers. Typically, I see a bump when like other people will promote me, or maybe I have like a stupid tweet about a prefrontal cortex or something like that that goes viral. But like, generally, me just sitting here yammering on or bringing on whoever generally doesn't get me a shitload of people coming in.
It's almost like the amount of time you spend in here matters more than who you collab with, which is great. I love it because it's freeing now, because now I don't have to be that guy like the clout chasers that, oh, I better say what Matt Walsh wants me to say so I have a chance to get on his show.
Yeah.
Yeah, Matt, tell me more about your dating advice. I'd love to hear it. Did you see that last one? That fucking guy.
He's no, sitting I didn't
there. He's sitting there handing out dating advice. Somebody's like, bro, things have changed a lot since 1986 when you got married. And he's like, hey, I went through the meat grinder. I figured it out. I'm here to teach you. And I'm like, dude, out of all the reasons Matt Walsh's advice doesn't count, him being married early on is like the lowest of the list. How about the fact he's got no charisma, no charm? His chin has disappeared. He's completely ridiculous. Like, there's no redeeming quality about him. Maybe that's why I don't want to get his dating advice. I'd much like Roll's been married 27 years, but he could string a sentence together and he's got some pipes. I'll listen to that.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
it's kind of like you. He's kind of like you in 20 years or 30 years. I don't know how old you are. So, but I think he's in his 50s now.
Matt Walsh.
Well, you gotta be in your 30s. So, yeah, 20 years from now, you.
I'll be 30 in November.
Oh, congratulations. So, yeah, go get a Slayer t-shirt. An Ibanez guitar and
I thought you were saying I was Matt Walsh in 20 years.
No, the beard's not bad. That's a nice beard, actually.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Your big concern is if it starts to streak green or gray here. That
oh dude, no.
Not since Hitler has somebody ruined a facial hairstyle like Jack Murphy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, anytime anybody has
can do that anymore.
Anytime anybody has an internet incident right now, the first thing people do is copy and paste that beard on their fucking face. That's the first thing people do.
Which is funny, because, like, what's he more famous for? Cucking his wife or fucking up his career? And it's almost like it's interchangeable. If somebody sleeps around on their wife, you just put a picture of Jack Murphy. If somebody ruins their career by freaking out on camera, same photo.
Mm-hmm. It's always a $5 super chat, too.
I'm really glad I did that ad. I found out there's people who have been watching my podcast for a year. They didn't know what the fuck I was on about with this $5 super chat until they finally saw the Jack Murphy thing and then the Tate thing. I put them together. Like, now I get it. Every one of these runoffs at the mouth happen after a $5 super chat.
Well, you know, I'm kind of glad, at least for you and your audience, that they don't know that, because that shows that, like, hopefully they're not as terminally online as the rest of us if they don't know that reference.
Dude, you know how hard it is to get people to notice something online? There's somebody bitching about the new... there's a new Mad Max movie out.
Yeah, I saw that on Twitter, but I like didn't really pay attention to it.
Yeah, exactly. That's like a $300 million movie, $300 million marketing budget. You're like, what? Or that TV show that just finally got canceled. The one, I don't even know what it's called. All I know is it had the one meme about the guy. He's like, I'm a doctor. And then the other doctor's like, and he's crying over it. Like, I'm a surgeon. You know the one? That show's apparently been on air for 7 years. I don't even know its name. Outside of that 3-second meme, I've never heard of it.
I don't even know which meme you're referring to. If I saw it, I'd probably know.
You'll probably know it. You guys might know. But the point is, like, it's extremely hard to get anybody to even be aware you exist right now. The online market is so saturated for everything, which is another reason why I kind of need these ads, because you're right, people won't know. And that's why people were buying Tate's course about Hustler University, not knowing about his Forex scams he had before that, or his Hustler, like, money, like, they finally know about his money laundering and human trafficking thing. But I was telling you guys about this 2 years before his arrest. It's like, whatever, you're just a hater. I'm like, all right. But it's good now. So you have, like, it's almost like a history of the internet. Hey, just so you know, when people are making fun of you with a beard, this is why. And they're like, that really happened? You're like, yes, that happened. I have to remind people about Pat Stedman every fucking day, man. And I'm here for it because why is he so angry? Why is he yelling at other collaborators? Why can't he get along? Like, there you go. I have it in 22 second snippets. Why? I'm an acrimonious ass and I don't like these people. They're horrible people. And you just didn't know it yet.
Well, I think this is kind of coming back with like a lot of the trad people. I was talking to Jack
fake ass
about
trad
this as
people.
Well.
You mean?
Yeah, it always seems to be the case that like these people who loudly and proudly, you know, profess how you should live the trad life, they always got their skeletons in the closet. Oh my god! Always.
It's almost like they're compensating, huh?
Almost.
Yeah, it's like the remember the old joke where a guy would buy a convertible because he's or a big truck he's making up for a small dick. It's like the branding version of that.
Mm-hmm. Barbie for
there's got to be some yeah it's got to be some catchy way to call it like a Dodge 3500 of branding, you know what I mean? The one ton, the Chevy 3500, mm-hmm. the Ford F-250 of brands. The 250 was the one ton, wasn't it? Or am I thinking a 350?
No, 250 is a one ton.
Okay, good one ton. Yeah. none of this half ton bullshit. We're not going to Home Depot. Mm-hmm. We do real work. We do what the commercials say. We drop a load of tires into our truck from 10 feet up. Mm-hmm. Or a giant boulders for some reason, or cement blocks.
It's just to test the truck out. There was in my corner of the internet, when it comes to, like the libertarian guys, I'm seeing like this resurgence of like trad life and all this. And you had pointed out to me a while ago about guys with the narcissistic fantasy, mm-hmm. and I told Jack and Rob this that like I kind of hope that some of these guys. The girls that they're pining for years and years and years just goes and fucks their best friend. Not because I like want them to suffer and hurt, but because I want
them
to
learn.
Kind of. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly that.
Dude, that was such a common story. Like I didn't know people didn't have that experience. Mm-hmm. I remember that when I was like the unattractive guy and I didn't know how to close the deal with girls, having my buddies fuck a girl I was into. And it wasn't even because they were like trying to teach me a lesson. It's just that she was available. And then this guy's not being like this guy. I'll fuck him. And then they tell you about it later and you get all mad. You sit there and you huff, but you don't want to fight because you're your buddy.
Yeah.
I think rites of passage. There's the rites of passage. Have your chattish buddy sleep with the girl you've been sweet on for the last 6 months. Mm-hmm. And then ever bitch about him to you. he's the worthlessest human being ever. It's like, I wasn't like that. Why didn't you sleep with me? Oh, mm-hmm. Steven, I should have picked up the dog shit. I don't even know Steven. I just hate what he stands for. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? The Canadian American conservative thing. That I married my high school sweetheart. That, but it was mostly on that stupid video about the dog shit where he was acting like a petulant child. Like, bro, you can't
look what you made me
about,
do. Look
yeah,
at what I'm
about
doing.
Masculinity, and he's like, you know, in my house, you don't take the car. You should walk. You should pick the dog. I'm like, fuck, man. What a naggy. If I was his wife, I'd have clean up your own dog shit. I'm out of here. And isn't the new one now? She kept his last name because it's got more clout in it at least. So like kudos to her. I guess if you're gonna take your half of your husband's money in the divorce, you might as well take his name too.
Yeah. And then go on to be an online brand about it.
Dude, how embarrassing is that when like your biggest like what's the best way for me to get clout? I know I'm gonna name myself after Steven Crowder. Oh my god, that's like somebody else calling them like a Ryan Stone derivative. There, I'll leech off of his clout and I'll steal them like, you know, cheap Chinese knockoffs. Like, why? You really don't want this smoke. And I don't even mean it's as smoke. It's like you don't want this smoke. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll call it like a Kyle Power Hour and I'll buy like an orange instead of Marshall. Mm-hmm. I'll get orange amps behind here and then a bunch of Ibanez guitars. And start talking about redneck stuff and trucks and Pantera just to piss you off. You're like, bro.
That might have to be the one reason why I go up to Canada to kick your ass specifically for that.
Yeah. all the beers I have here are brands. You're like, none of those are Pittsburgh brands. What the hell?
Yeah, what the fuck is this? Miller Lite? White Claws? Are you fucking serious?
Or Darby's. Darby's is like the White Claw, the expensive White Claws. That's what we have here. I don't know if you guys have those.
No. I had the, like I said earlier, the Monster seltzers. And you know what, man? I was impressed. The white one tasted like the regular white one with like a little hint of alcohol. The peach one was good. The green one tasted like the green Monster, which I'm like. And then the berry one, I didn't like at all.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Whatever. I'll shell out the money to get like a Monster and pour it myself. It's part of the process for me. It's not so much the drink. It's the It's the making it. It's like how Japanese have their little tea ceremony. That's me with my getting crunked ceremony.
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, they're 6%. I didn't really get too buzzed off them. But, man, I think after I drank a few of them, like, I'm just, like, tired. I don't really feel anything. I just, like, want to go take a nap now.
That's what weed. That's why I never got into weed once they legalized it here. I tried once and then twice, and I was like, it just puts me to sleep. So I'm like, eh. I think for weed, you have to get into it when you're a teenager, or you just never do. So I feel bad that I rebelled against my family by never doing drugs and going to college.
I mean, that's more like the right life path, you know, at least in my eyes. I can't stand the smell of weed, so I never smoked it. I grew up around people who did it all the time, but like,
just, it does stink. It's a really horrible smell. I'll give you that.
People love that smell though. And I don't know how. I'm like, dude, people literally say it smells like skunk, and that's all I smell. I can't fucking do it, dude. It smells so fucking awful.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, we've been going for about an hour and a half, dude. And I know you're on a little bit of a time crunch. So, Ryan, it's been a blast. I know it's probably a little bit chill and a little bit all over the place, but dude, I always enjoy talking to you on both shows, this and then Cognitive Vigilance, where we can yell at Brandy, or, you know, she can, you know, yell at you about how Myron's a gay retard. So,
dude, honestly, like I said, I've always got time for the both of you guys. I think it's great.
I know, dude. Actually, I appreciate it.
And I don't like many people in this space, but you guys are one of them. You're good people.
Nice. Well, I hope so. And then Ryan being a 6'4".
Yeah, I didn't know that. All of a sudden, his whole like, oh, just be yourself shit makes so much more sense. Just be yourself. I mean,
I'm a 5'11 balding Dago, so there was a little bit of work required for me, beard and then tattoos and stuff. So,
first, you got me beat. I think 175 centimeters, like 5'9", 5'10", something like that. So I'm like, at this point, I'm just going to be, you know, posting incel fan fiction, whatever.
I mean, we're both comfortably made. So, Ryan, what do you got going on? All that good stuff.
After this, I have to go run some errands. I'm going to come back. I'm going to stream more Minecraft today. And then obviously just the Substack. The Substack's the big one for right now. Keep up in there. That's where all the infos on like the new book stuff's going to come. So that's it for me.
Cool. Cool. And yeah, obviously your gaming channel. And you know what? I got to listen to Dread. I got the audiobook, but I haven't listened to it yet. So yeah, man. Well, I appreciate your time and all that. Yeah, if you have anything else, we'll call her there.
All right. Sounds good.
Cool. All right, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. Until next time, take care.
Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the MyLowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more with volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.